Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Welcome to episode 224 of Five and Dive. It is Wednesday, June 29th. I am your host, Craig Goldstein, editor-in-chief of Baseball Prospectus. Joining me as my co-host today from the West Coast. It's early over there. Bradford William Davis of Insider. Bradford, how's it going? How's your flight out there? How's the early morning treating you? I'm mid-morning, so it's not so bad.
Yeah, I just put on shorts like 5 minutes ago. It was cool, but it's nice. It's always nice seeing a different part of the country. So yeah, happy to be here. Yeah, good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. No, it's good to have you back. And obviously I just need people to recognize that we do put in a lot of effort into this podcast. We put on pants or shorts, you know, it is a job, as we say. So it's good to have you back, man. I'm glad you were able to join. Our first topic of the day, there's a lot of drama going on in baseball right now, especially with the Dodgers. Our first topic is there's no such thing as a Freeman agency. Freddie Freeman famously signed with the Dodgers in the offseason, did not stay with Atlanta as he and everyone else was expecting. He recently, over the weekend, came back to Atlanta. The Dodgers took 2 of 3 from the Braves. There was a very exciting extra innings game on Sunday Night Baseball. On Sunday, it seemed like it was a good series. They honored him before the game. He got his World Series ring. He broke down in tears at the presser. It all seemed like a love fest, right? You know, it seemed like this everything was, you know, maybe a little more emotional than you might expect, but emotional in a good way. And then it kind of got to the point where some people were like, what's going on here? What's happening with Freddie Freeman? Like, how much does he love the Braves? Like, is it maybe too much if he's on another team already? Like, are you smiling a little too big at your ex? You know what I mean? It's like, it's cool that you get along, but like maybe you lingered a little bit too long with that look. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe you stared off into space a little bit too much right after. Like, what's going on there? And then after the series ends, it comes out that Freddie Freeman is changing agencies. He has fired his agent at Excel. I will add that this reporting came from Mark Bowman at MLB.com. Some of the breakdown behind Freddie leaving was that he, his agent, Casey Close, and the agency sent the Braves 2 offers, apparently, and this is again per Bowman, like way above Freeman's expectations, and said, you have an hour to decide. This was after the lockout had resolved all of that. 2 days later, the Braves traded for Matt Olson, and Freddie Freeman was not going to be a Brave anymore. And he was stunned and crestfallen and this kind of thing, which seems to indicate he maybe wasn't as involved in his own negotiations and free agency as much as he should have been. I think he'd probably tell you that now, but wasn't the case then. And the whole thing seems to have culminated in this, in that he's moved on from them. He didn't like what they did, and And yeah, I mean, what's I don't know, what's your read on this whole situation with Freeman and Atlanta? He was again, like, he broke down in tears. He was clearly emotional about this. He'd been with the organization for 15 years. I think some of that's pretty understandable.
Yeah, I think he's perfectly happy in his marriage and doesn't want anyone to misunderstand that he loves his wife. He loves, you know, his wife being the Dodgers. Yes. And then he's never had a stray thought about the girl who got away being the Braves. I think he probably should have, if he meant this much to him, he probably should have taken less money, like, and just gone, you know, less guaranteed money anyway. And still, yeah, well, if it's that big a deal, I mean, like, if that you're going to fire your agent over how it went, like, yeah. But you know, I've heard that a lot of times that, like, you know, these, you know, like, agents are smooth talkers and they convince you this is what's best for you, this is what's best for you, this is best for you, and you, they probably, like, sack you into, you know, into it. And I'm sure that, you know, again, the millions extra on the paper, you know, probably help a little bit. But then you realize that, oh yeah, a lot of deferrals here, and oh wow, these taxes are crazy, and you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
I can only understand this being very, very challenging for him. If he would have effectively had the same lifestyle, no matter what, no matter who had signed him, and that the money wasn't far enough apart, you know, to justify, you know, what he loses by not being a Brave for life.
I think the question for me, and it's not one that I have an answer to, or one I think we'll get an answer to, is the way this story has broken, based on what Bowman had said and kind of the things Freeman has subtly implied, is that, like, when he that in coming back to Atlanta, he talked to some of the people back in Atlanta. I don't know if it's the front office people specifically, but some people in the Atlanta organization, and that seems to have spurred him to make this decision to move on from his agency. And I, you know, you could see this is constructing a scenario where it removes a lot of fault from Freeman. And I'm not saying that's the likeliest case, but you could see a scenario where he said to his agent, you know, here's about what I want, you know, or here's what I'm willing to take. You go figure out the best deal possible, but this is what, you know, here's where I'm at, and you go figure it out. And the agent said, we'll take care of it. He's been with this agency a very long time. They negotiated his prior deal in Atlanta. You could imagine a scenario where there's a level of trust where he's not involved in the, you know, maybe I don't want it to be personal like that. Like, I'm involved in the discussions with the Atlanta organization. I'm going to let my agent handle it and keep things a little bit more distant. Obviously being too personal doesn't seem to be a huge problem with Freddie. This has been obviously a very personal thing the whole time. But regardless, I could see a scenario where he kind of said, like, I'm going to be a little bit of a remove and, like, let my agents handle this. And now it seems like he's kind of finding out how his agents handled it. Do you know what I mean? And again, I'm not saying that's the most likely scenario. And I think in any scenario, like, you have to be responsible for the contracts that you that get traded, or, you know, the offers that get traded and things like that. You're the player. Ultimately, the agency works for you, not the other way around. But I do think that that's kind of how it's playing out in, or one version of how what's played out could be interpreted, maybe.
Yeah, I guess it has to be something along those lines, Craig. Like, just, you know, they he's been blindsided, you know, by you know, how things went, and especially after, again, you know, successfully signing an extension a few years ago, you know, and so probably, he probably just wants more agency over his, you know, career, I guess, you know, even though this is probably the last contract he signs, I think it shows again how frustrating it must have been, you know, to have realized what he lost in Atlanta, or how things went down in his final days there, you know.
Yeah,
that that even though this is, again, in all livelihood, the last contract he signs ever, like that he's, you know, he's on his way out. I mean, and he wants, and he wanted representation. So
yeah, and right. I mean, I don't think he's in any rush to get a new agent because, again, like, he's under contract for 6 years. I mean, look, they will handle his advertisement stuff and whatever in all likelihood. So he'll find someone will be interested in it, right? Freddie Freeman in LA will be a nice client, but he's probably in no rush. I will say, you know, it's interesting. He had some quotes saying, like, it's good to have that behind me. I can focus on baseball. And it's like, okay, like, were you not focused on baseball? You had Clayton Kershaw saying, like, this was a nice ceremony. Like, I hope this current team is not second fiddle, essentially. I mean, like, do you think, I guess what I would say is, like, you can read into those things and that's fine. He is a 141 OPS plus. Like, I don't know, if he wasn't focused on baseball, it's not showing on the field. That would qualify as his best OPS plus outside of the shortened 2020 season since 2017. So, like, he's doing fine on the field. Like, if he wasn't focused on baseball before this series in Atlanta,
maybe he's trying to win Atlanta back. Right. You ever thought about that?
That's a good point. Like, that's a good point. Yeah, now I'm gonna be even better.
Yeah. How's your girl Matt doing? You know, you seen this?
Oh yeah,
you've seen these, you know, like, yeah. He's going through his midlife crisis, doing extra push-ups, you know.
I was gonna say crunches. You know, Matt Olson only a 126 OPS plus. So, you know, yeah, maybe they're missing something. I don't know. Okay, so yeah, that's all I've got on Freddie Freeman. It's a surprising amount of drama for a mid-June three game series, I felt like. So that was nice to get up during the over the weekend, I guess. Our second topic, Angels with Dirty Faces. We're back in Anaheim. We've got more than dirty faces. There's a lot of dirt being thrown in this one. I assume you saw the brawl. We'll get into the various subjects, but what was your take on all of this?
Telling the guy you hit, I had to hit you.
Andrew Wance.
Yes. That was a personal moment. That was a very, very good and appreciated breakdown.
Thank
you, Jimmy O'Brien and John Boy Media Enterprise.
I laughed multiple times during that.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I mean, that seems like a wreck. And Phil Nevin, dang, what's wrong with him?
Yeah, so look, I mean, I think it's a pretty basic old school move. I think Phil Nevin is obviously to blame. I don't know why the umpires didn't toss Wance immediately, right? They had warned both sides after getting together and talking about it. Then he hits the guy in the ass. I don't understand. There's no scenario under which that those guys shouldn't have gotten tossed immediately. And I really appreciate Jesse Winker going not after Wance, but after Phil Nevin. And saying this was you clearly decided this, right? You went after you went after Julio Rodriguez, our young player, and then you went after me, and you are the one to blame for all of this. I appreciated that. It was a legitimate fight. Jesse Winker really gave it to Ryan Tepera. He had at least three full left-handed punches on him. JP Crawford was throwing out like forearm shivers. He's coming over the top with the forearm. Tepera was taking some real swings. Archie Bradley, less involved, did fall, getting, as I laughed at that when John Boy had it in the video, he fell. Turns out he broke his elbow. So he's going to be out for like 4 weeks at least. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me to have any sympathy for anyone on the Angels side on this. Anthony Rendon was getting involved despite having surgery on his wrist like a week ago. I guess I don't know what the Angels were mad about here. Eric Swanson came up and in and then missed. But if they're familiar with Eric Swanson, like, the guy doesn't have the greatest command. I understand getting mad about Mike Trout almost getting hit, but you don't need to throw at two separate guys over Mike Trout almost getting hit. You know what I mean?
They're mad about losing almost every game for a month. That's what they're mad about. And it boiled over into this. I honestly think it's probably the 70% of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I certainly think I understand that vibe is going to be what it's going to be, but like, I don't know. I get that in to some degree in terms of like throwing behind somebody, but like once you do that, the point is made, right? Like, I don't think you get two bites at that apple. You throw at one batter, right. You know what I mean? And they did. And I mean, for it to be Julio is their best player. I'll grant them that, but like, you don't need to be throwing at a, you know, like a 21-year-old kid's head. Or it was at the letters behind his back. But like, you know, I don't know.
In April, they would have called that a strike on him.
Yeah, well, it was out. It wasn't outside, Jeff. It was, you know, it's inside. I don't know. Otani got in a little bit. His interpreter got in. Nevin was eventually suspended. I don't have all the suspensions in front of me. Nevin was suspended the longest, 10 games. That seemed very justified to me. The Mariners definitely lost like the more crucial players between Winker and Crawford, but you know, I thought the suspensions were fine. It was the people who were involved in the fight. You know, that it was for the Angels, their relievers in terms of Tapera and Raisel Iglesias I feel bad. Iglesias got ejected after mostly being a peacekeeper. Again, this John Boy pointed this out. He was mostly being a peacekeeper. Then he finds out he's been ejected and he chucks the bubble gum and the sunflower seeds onto the field. I think that's what got him the follow-up suspension, which, you know, again, if you're going to get ejected for doing nothing, you know, go ahead and get your money's worth afterwards, I think. I don't know. I think, again, the suspensions were to the guys involved. I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts on the Angels and Mariners fracas here?
Yeah, I'm just glad that Shohei Ohtani finally had like a reason to like, I don't know, wake up in the morning a day, probably the next morning, like, oh wow, like it's what it is to be alive. I haven't felt that in 4 years. I'm happy that he's invigorated. That's why he's throwing 8 inning shutouts and hitting, you know, 450, you know, foot bombs at 110 miles an hour. I think it's because of that fight. So happy for Shohei.
Yeah, I am as well. I will say I also should point out the we didn't have it in the rundown, but there was like a nice bit of internet moment with this. I kind of rolled my eyes at the start of it. There was a Mariners fan that decided to send Jesse Winker a pizza after his suspension. Which I was like, you know, like Jesse Winker is a professional baseball player who signed a 2-year contract recently. Like, he doesn't need the random internet person to send him a pizza, but he got the pizza. And then what I really appreciated was that the person who did this was like, you guys, like this guy, the DoorDash delivery person, like worked hard to do this, whatever, like, please tip him. A lot of people tipped him. He paid it forward. He made a donation to St. Jude's. It was ultimately, and like Winker acknowledged all of this, like it was ultimately like a nice story in multiple ways.
Well, I hope they didn't tip the DoorDash app because they might have.
No, they did not. They set it up separately through a Venmo connected to the guy, right. Which was, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. But they thought of that.
95% of that.
Yeah, no, they thought of that. And it was really good. And it was there's an article in The Athletic, Stephen Nesbitt wrote it. It's very touching. It's a nice little bit of internet, despite we normally get all the negative things. And again, like I think Winker comes out of this looking, I mean, despite, you know, getting in a fight about it, I think he was pretty righteous in his cause. I think you know, he was defending his team and not in a, I mean, you know, he was basically just saying like, let it go. Like, it's over at this point. You know, you don't need to do this. I don't know. Phil Nevin, I don't know what he's doing. I saw in the breakdown, he's complaining to the umps that like, you know, he was like, they threw at him. Come on. Like, you should be on my side. They threw at Trout. And it's like, dude, like, the umpires are never going to be okay with that. Like, that's not going to be how this works ever. I got nothing else on this one. But I would say watch the breakdown. It was a good one. Watch, or go read the Nesbitt write up on the stuff that happened after and the pizza delivery and stuff like that. It was a nice little follow up. Our third subject for the day: antitrust but verify. This was an interesting thing that I woke up to yesterday. Helpful that we pushed the pod a day, Bradford. Normally this stuff comes out after we record, so it's nice to have something right beforehand. The Senate Judiciary Committee sent a bipartisan, strongly worded letter it was actually two minor league advocates and Harry Marino, who is one of the founders of minor league advocates, basically investigating or indicating a strong interest in the ways in which MLB's antitrust exemption impacts minor leaguers. There was more to it than that, but that was the broad thrust and why it was sent to someone who works for minor league advocates, is the ways in which the exemption interacts with MLB's control over the minors and the ways in which that negatively impacts the class of minor leaguers in the system. So I'm curious what you thought about the letter and if you think it means anything more than kind of simple grandstanding on an issue that gets some, gets these guys some press a little bit. And there's really not much of a downside, and maybe just triggers some donations from MLB, which obviously loves to give from both sides.
That's a great question too. Like, we'll just put MLB back on the.
Oh, they're already donating again. I know that. The question is how much.
Really? Is that true?
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure they started back up sometime in 2021. I can go look that up. I will try and verify that, but I'm pretty sure.
Okay, I got you. I think it's encouraging to work with Harry Marino. And advocates for minor leagues. That is an organization that seems to be, doing a lot of, making a lot of very good noise on behalf of, the ridiculous pay discrepancies, that minor leaguers face. Just recently they were forcing the issue publicly with the Mets, and had, local politicians, apparently informing the team about the desire to meet with them and bang out a better situation for their minor leaguers. So that's great, this is exactly where the fight should go, given that in any situation, as the letter said, this would be, or as Harry Marino said, right, this would be illegal, colluding to pay everyone sub-poverty wages. That's I think is probably the most encouraging, because usually it is a bunch of grandstanding, and to be clear, I don't think that these people care, meaning the politicians, care tremendously about the fight of minor leaguers, but nonetheless, it is once again in the ether, which is positive, and I think that if it can be, if the issue can be forced is something that could win or lose votes, for them, that can be a very good thing. So I think that it's great that they asked that last question of like, hey, what else, should we know as we consider, whether or not we decide to move forward with, what else do we know as we continue to investigate, revoking MLB's antitrust status, because there are so many things, so many horrible, horrible things happening in Major League Baseball at any time, that is it gives you wide open terrain with which to provide, opportunity for for perhaps real attention to, to big issues, whether that is, the let's see, you know, like evading tight regulation of its gambling enterprises, you know, and all that that comes with creating an ethical product for theoretically ethical product for gamblers, to the exploitation of boys in the Caribbean. Like, yeah, you can just kind of go on and on and on about like stuff that should make you think about revoking its antitrust. So that's a good thing, and that, you know, and I think if people are smart, they'll pursue in earnest. So it's good.
Yeah, and I think it's funny, we ran kind of not knowing any news was coming, and it is a bit separate, but at BP we ran an antitrust primer kind of from Andrew Leahy at BP, who's a tax attorney, but he wanted to write about the antitrust exemption and kind of the way that the Supreme Court has behaved that might leave it vulnerable. So you're seeing this from kind of, you could see this from two different angles, right? There's Congress can remove it. There's nothing any court can do. I mean, it wouldn't affect the court aspect, but there's also, you know, there are lawsuits kind of coming up that are set to be heard. And it's not hard to see this court, which, you know, is letting the idea of stare decisis, which is, you know, let the decision stand. They're kind of not as tied to that as prior courts have been. And Justice Gorsuch said in NCAA versus Alston, you know, he kind of talked about antitrust and market realities and things like that. You know, and just as in terms of court decisions, like they've let the antitrust exemption stand, but it's on pretty weak logic. It basically says that that baseball games are all within state. it's not interstate commerce, which is kind of laughable, given what we know about how baseball works right now. So I guess I just bring that up to say, like, there are kind of multiple angles at which the antitrust exemption could fall. And I would say it's on pretty shaky ground right now. But I'm definitely inclined to agree with you that, like, the politicians both don't really care about this particular issue, but it's also they could be made to care about it more as this rolls along. And also that it's not a bad thing for minor leaguers, for advocates like minor league advocates and organizations like that, for them to be looking into this and getting this kind of public hearing, so to speak. I don't know. On that note, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with our fourth segment. We're back with episode 224. We're going around the horn in segment four. The major thing we want to discuss going around the horn here is, right before the podcast started recording, ESPN's Don Van Natta Jr. dropped a very, very long piece that is multiple interviews conducted with Rob Manfred, multiple sit-downs. It's a long piece kind of discussing... well, I'll just give you the headline here is, Rob Manfred wants you to know he doesn't hate baseball. He wants to save it. I think it's good when you have to come out there and have have the commissioner of baseball right up front say, I don't hate this thing.
Mark Manfred said that my I don't hate baseball t-shirt is answering as a provoking lot of questions already answered by the shirt.
Yeah. And this is, I said this online, but like, it's good. He had the big sit down with Evan Drellick a couple years ago and had to say, like, I don't hate baseball. Oh, was it last year? Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. I think
time is, you know, whatever to me at this point. He said, like, I don't hate baseball. What do you want me to do? Tattoo I love baseball on my head. Again, it's very good that he has to constantly reiterate this. He might want to look into the shirt. Honestly, it might answer questions, so he doesn't have to keep doing it. Look, I will say I did not read the entire thing in detail prior to the podcast. Again, it's a long form piece. I did get to multiple parts in detail. I skimmed around some other stuff. So I'm not going to claim I know every single thing that's in here. What I would say is that it's certainly kind to him up front. I do think I do think Van Natta does kind of relay facts after Manfred relays opinion in multiple points. So I think he does a good job of kind of saying like, yeah, he says this, but you know, here's what the actual situation was. There are multiple kind of pull quotes from this, as you would expect from a guy, or from a piece of this length. I think I'll throw out my personal favorite and then you can toss out one. But in discussing the Astros cheating scandal and the following punishment, and the Yankees, the letter he had sent to the league following the Yankees and Red Sox infractions and all of that, is this. Manfred tells me he had assumed, well, he hoped that managers, GMs, and owners were aware of their team's cheating schemes and would, quote, self-correct. A remarkable admission, considering Manfred's front row seat to the steroids epidemic. And then here's a quote from Manfred. I hate to admit this, but it's based on a naive belief that our game is populated by people who want to do the right thing. They're grown men. They know the difference between following the rules and not following the rules. I don't think it's going to get better than that for me. The commissioner, do you know who's in this league? Do you know what these people set out to do? The entire thing is exploiting these areas that aren't like that you're not paying attention to as a commissioner, or that there's a gray area. We're going to absolutely push the limit. They do, again, this is service time manipulation. This is IFA bonuses. This is early deals. Every single thing that Manfred doesn't actually prioritize and come down hard on, they're pushing the envelope because that's going to help them get better. That's the entire operating thesis for almost every major league front office. I can't speak for Colorado at this point, but like every other one of them is you know, seeking to press these advantages, to exploit loopholes, to look at things that aren't being paid attention to and pour money and resources and effort into them. And that's it's not about following the fucking rules. You know, that's not what these guys view themselves as hired to do. And you can look at almost any area in baseball to see, again, there are grievances against teams for not spending their revenue sharing money in the right way. These guys are not, this is not what they're trying to do. They're not just trying to, like, I mean, I'm sorry, you say a naive belief. Rob Manfred can't afford to be naive. That's not like, you're the commissioner of the fucking sport. I'm sorry. I got upset. Please. I don't know. I'm going to take a sip of coffee and calm down.
Another great, who's the commissioner over here? Quote for me was him, in Banana's words, deeply regretting. And then Manfred quote, this public thing he got into with the players union. About like their insistence that he paid for a full season with fans. and the way Manfred describes it is like stupid, he now calls it, but he felt he had no choice. I had 30 owners saying, what the hell are you gonna say? They're like, are you a doormat here? He says, my credibility was on the line with my bosses, and like inadvertently answering, yes, I am a doormat to you guys. like you have to understand, I was being a wimpy punk because the owners told me, be a little baby for me, grovel and cry, you know? Like, you know, like, it's like, you know, like he's, in his attempt to assert himself as a tough guy, he proved himself to be the biggest fraud of all. And I love it. I just went out and said, I'm a little wimpy baby for anything that, I don't know, who's like the corniest owner, you know, anything Arte Moreno or so, or whatever, you know, whatever he tells me to do.
Let's put it, the tweet, I'm just a little boy. It's on birthday. I'm a little birthday boy or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Like, yeah, like
you wouldn't hit me.
He grovels and, you know, in the face of like, you know, doing the wrong thing. You know,
well, and I think
to keep his lucrative job, and that's just like, you know, that's who you are.
The worst part of it is that everything you said is correct, and then he goes to ESPN and mules about how him doing that like didn't get enough respect, or like is being disrespected or whatever. It's like you're complaining to this ESPN reporter that you were in a hard, like your job as commissioner put you between the owners and the players, and that like you had to answer to both sides or whatever. Like, what the hell are you talking about? That's your job. That you don't get credit for being like, oh, I had 30 owners breathing down my neck. Yeah, you're the commissioner, dude. You're their butler, basically. Like, you don't, I don't know. It's not like you're standing up to them. And then he complains that the players distaste for him and all his lawyerly dissembling and condescending statements and smiling during negative press conferences and things like that. He says, oh, that's a tactical distaste for me. They made me an issue, and I got a lot of negativity from that. And I just need to say, I really appreciated Bruce Meyer, the lead negotiator for the PA, coming out and essentially saying, no, they actually just dislike this guy. He said the suggestion that the players' negative views of Mr. Manfred were somehow not sincere or were orchestrated by the union is an unfortunate attempt to deflect and avoid taking responsibility for the league's actions, which the players themselves saw and heard firsthand. I mean, it's just an incredible bit of attempted manipulation, I feel like, from Manfred. And I honestly struggle to believe anyone could view what he's or could fall for what he's trying to pull in some of this. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Maybe you could if you like get really, really tired of reading this long article. Which I don't blame you to do.
No, like, yeah, oh, it is God, it is quite going? Long. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess, I don't know. This thing where he attempts to seek kind of sympathy or whatever, while also, by the way, claiming to be thick-skinned constantly. He always says he's tough and he's got a thick skin. And I appreciate Van Natta kind of says, like, you know, showing that thick skin of his in a couple of spots. He's like, you know, or appearing much more thin skinned than he claims to be. I don't know. I thought those were pretty good. This was one of my favorite paragraphs from Van Natta. What I'd learned about Manfred is that he doesn't hesitate to blame himself for gaffes that have caused him so much trouble, and sometimes in a surprisingly candid, self-deprecating way. But when confronted with questions about his record, he often bristles defensively, offers multi-pronged rationalizations for his decisions, and sometimes pins blame on others despite insisting he's thick-skinned. Yeah, I don't know. That second half of that paragraph kind of invalidates the first half. I'm not saying he doesn't take blame in private sometimes, but when you're constantly being like, well, it's these, you know, you're saying, oh, they dislike me tactically, and also this is some other thing, and also it's someone else's fault, and I get bristly and condescending and patronizing when I say something, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's informing why people don't like you, dude.
Yeah, it's funny how like even this article, which I would say is like does a whole lot to attempt to
humanize,
the commissioner. Like it, like he can't help, like goblinize himself.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just shines through, and it is. It, I think it's who he is, right? It just comes through.
Like no, trust me, I am a troll. You know, I am less than human. Like you have to believe me. You know, are you sure about that, Robert? You know, like Rob is as he calls him, right? Or yeah, as he asks him to call him.
Yeah, please call me Rob.
Anyway, yeah, so it's revealing in a way that like Michael Jordan's The Last Dance is revealing about like how like even in like this like you know soft sort of like you know hagiography, like you know the true MJ comes out in the choices he makes, you know, the things he chooses to say and include in the piece he's directing. I feel like it kind of same thing could apply for this.
All right, that's that on Manfred. I would also point out Evans Relic did have a piece on the international free agent draft that I think is well worth your time. He basically skewers some of other previous public comments that Manfred has made recently, some of which we talked about on prior podcasts. Jeff and I talked about on like him saying essentially it takes two to have a bribe, that kind of thing. I would check that out as well. In actual baseball or on-field baseball news, I should say, on-field and off-field, the Jays walked off the Red Sox after their closer Tanner Houck was unavailable due to not traveling to Toronto because he's not vaccinated. Jaron Duran also didn't travel with the team for the same reason. As Buster Olney pointed out, if the season ended today, one of my favorite bits that people do throughout the year, if the season ended today, the Red Sox would be playing the Jays in a wild card round in Toronto. I don't know. Maybe something to think about, guys. Maybe something to think about.
I kind of think that will make them get the vaccine. Like, you know, literally when it's like that tangible, winning the World Series. So maybe I'm just being too darn romantic.
I'm looking at Aaron Judge getting a vaccine and having a season for all time. Maybe it gives him, maybe he'll be amazing. You know?
Right. So like, I would like to think it'll be a non-issue by September when the Red Sox, you know, when it's like, guys, like if you get this Johnson & Johnson, like we might win the World Series, and, you know, but if you don't, you make it so much harder to win the World Series, you know, like, the Yankees are running with the division. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be like a, you know, I think it's very, very likely that it's a Boston Toronto kind of seeding, you know, very likely, you know. I don't think the way the standings are shaking right now, besides the Yankees being like, you know, a demigod 120 game winner, like none of it was like, you know, none of it is that surprising, you know, the order here. Right. It's, you know, like you should expect this. You should expect to have to play games in Canada in the playoffs. I think they'll fix it, but we'll see. You know, but it is funny to watch them both saved because they don't have their primary closer.
Yeah, I mean they have to
always enjoys his personal liberty. As Dan Shaughnessy pointed out. Shout out Dan Shaughnessy.
Yeah, again, the worst person you know making a great point. You know,
excellent point, yeah.
Extremely that Onion article. In other baseball news, the Rockies have taken the first two from the Dodgers. Dodgers, you know, haven't really gotten going the way certainly the Yankees have. They're not having a bad season, but they had just swept Cincinnati, took 2 of 3 from Atlanta, seemed like 5 of 6. Maybe some things were going, you know, Freddie Freeman was putting the Braves behind him, going to focus on baseball now. And they ran into Chad Kuhl. He's a buzzsaw. Sometimes you just get completely shut out in a complete game by Chad Kuhl. It's going to happen, you know?
They've had some trouble in Coors the last couple of years. It's been not a pleasant place for them to play.
No, it's really, I mean, look, I think anyone, despite the Rockies kind of being consistently not very good, I think going to Coors is hard for anyone in general. I think anything can happen, I should say. I don't know that it's always hard for them. They've struggled more than most. I did see something that it was like, if don't know, they're like 2-9 versus the Rockies and Pirates this year. And then like, I don't know, like 20 games over 500 versus everyone else. So yeah, I don't know. Weird year for the Dodgers. This was Clayton Kershaw got absolutely lit up after the game. Someone did ask him if it was pitching in Coors that was the problem. And he said, I don't think I would have pitched very well anywhere tonight. So, you know, I don't know. It was a 7-4 loss. Muncy hit a homer. Maybe he's getting going again. I don't know. Charlie Blackmon had four hits by the sixth inning. So it's just one of those games. I don't know. I think they'll figure it out at some point, but it's a very banged up team and we'll see what, I don't know. We'll see going forward. I don't know if you have any thoughts on the Rockies and Dodgers, Bradford.
No, I do like that. I liked, Clayton Kershaw committing to radical honesty here. You know, it's not part of
I sucked. Like, it was just, I was bad.
He's looking in the man in the mirror, hoping to change his ways. So
yeah, Rob Manfred could learn a thing or two from Trout and Ohtani are making that Matt Tomic tweet come to life again. Trout and Ohtani both homered. The Angels lost again by a lot. You know, Tungsten Arm O'Doyle is back. Trout had another big game. I think my favorite thing from this game was Mike Trout out in the outfield catching Elvis Peguero's tipping his pitches based on how he was coming set and how far his hands were from his body. I don't know if you saw the video of that, but Trout is just absolutely miserable out in center field, and he's doing the come set motion, and he's like, it's here and it's here. Like, come on, man, what are you doing here? This was right before the game got out of hand. I mean, they had already given up the lead, but it truly got out of hand there. Yeah, I don't know. The Angels, in Phil Nevin's absence, it's not going well. In other news, the Mariners, well, we're sticking in the AL West, and the Mariners, I don't know. It's amazing that the Angels have been as bad as they've been of late, and the Mariners are still a half game back. I don't really know what to make of that. I guess that says everything about the Mariners that needs to be said. But Ty France essentially had kind of the Max Muncy injury, where he was reaching for a ball at first base and a guy caught his glove, bent his arm back a little bit. Yeah, he's going to be out for a bit, and the Mariners have absolutely no depth. So they traded a reliever and a minor league pitcher, Wyatt Mills and William Fleming, for Carlos Santana. He's back in the house. So he'll be manning first base. He's not been having a great season, but he does walk a lot. Again, they really didn't have – I mean, the other option here was, like, playing a lot of Dylan Moore or Kevin Padlow, I guess, at first base. I don't know. A move needed to be made. I don't think this saves their season, I guess, is where I'll land on that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jerry, he likes to trade. Like, that's it. You know,
right.
Like, I really think it's – he likes to trade. I mean, there's more than that. I think it's good to not totally punt on the season because, like, you know, yeah, they've struggled so far. But, like, they you know, I think genuinely try to put, like – you know, the best foot forward, but 8 foot forward this year, you know?
Yeah.
I'm feeling competitive team out there. So that's such a fun year. They signed, you know, the Cy Young winner, you know, they signed Robbie Ray. Like, you know, that Robbie Ray's been kind of mid is one thing, but like, you know, but like they went, you know, they were going for this. They just have not executed well. I think with the bigger seeding, you know, of this year, it's right. Not impossible.
Expanded,
you know, like, yeah. they are not winning the West. You know, I was wrong to pick them as the upset AL West contenders. They are not winning the West. They're not winning the West, but and they're probably not winning. Not going to playoffs either. But it's better to not punt first base either. You know, and so at least with Carlos Santana, who's not particularly good anymore, but still nonetheless, you're not punting first base. You know, like while your key players is out, you know, and I think that's worthwhile until they can try and figure out a better option or improve elsewhere, you know, and hope for the best. Because I mean, because the you know, the Red Sox, Blue Jays, and Rays all are beating up on each other, you know?
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, yeah, it wouldn't be utterly shocking, you know, if they got hot and another team was just not hot enough at the same time. So go for it.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say that's your hope. So right now they are 6.5 back of the last wild card spot. It's not great, but it's certainly, it's not even July yet. You can make up 7 games over the last 3 months of the season. You are behind right now the Angels, White Sox, Rangers, and Guardians. The three wild card teams right now are the Jays, Red Sox, and Rays. And as you said, like, they're going to be playing each other. So the idea is that, like, you can catch up as long as they beat up on each other. And I certainly think it's worth not punting the position. Again, your other options are not great. Santana, again, not great, but about league average so far this year. It's all, again, in the walk rate. He's 216, 349, 341. Maybe you can, and you know, you can work with him and figure out a way to get a little more power. Related to this trade, I would note, is Vinny Pasquantino got called up. We ran a call up on that. As Jarrett Seidler noted in a piece on Gunnar Henderson, possibly the best hitting prospect in the minor, pure hitting. Because he's first base, he's 24, not a lot of defensive value, but pure hitting prospect. He makes excellent swing decisions. He hits the ball really hard. Mike Petriello has been all over him for a few months. I think not just because they're, you know, both their last names end in a vowel. It's not just an Italian thing. The guy can really hit. He had an absolute breakout season in 2021, and he's continued that in 2022. He bypassed Nick Prado as kind of the first base, the guy who's getting called up for first base prospect in Kansas City. And he did that, by the way, that Prado, I believe, was on the 40 man and Pasquantino wasn't. So there was some actual kind of, like, you know, roster issues to overcome there too for Kansas City. And he did that. So we'll see what he's able to bring to Kansas City in the meantime. Our last segment, as always, what to watch. Anything you have your eyes on in particular, Bradford?
I mean, I'm definitely watching the City of Oakland versus the Oakland A's as they decide whether or not they're going to have the stadium out here in Howard Terminal. That's right. I honestly think that's one of the most interesting matchups of this year.
No, absolutely.
It's not baseball, but, you know, it's not on the field baseball, but it is literally about the field.
We didn't even talk about with MLB leaking that they'd waive their relocation fee for
absolutely.
Yeah. That's I'm sure the owners will be happy if Rob Manfred does that.
Yeah, it's kind of absurd, like that. They didn't make it into Don Vanatta's piece. All that kind of stuff. But hey, whatever. That's, you know, like I've been trying to read up on that. I'm in the Bay Area right now, actually, you know. And it is, it really seems as though, like, the City of Oakland is holding out in a way that cities usually don't on the issue of, like, diverting taxpayer funds towards building up a stadium, because we know that the economics do not favor cities. Like, yeah, Civic Pride School, but, like, you know, but the actual financials do not benefit city, you know, do not benefit cities, you know, nearly as much as anyone claims, if at all. Because of the, because there is something of a zero sum to having a baseball park. You know, it's like, if someone's going to the stadium, they're not going to spend money at their local bar or a restaurant or movies or anything like that. You know, like, they're going to the game. You know, they're going to this very expensive, outing, right? And so that's just money to the team. So if that's the case, then you don't need to be subsidizing it with tax dollars. Not when kids in Oakland's horrific public school system need, like, you know, books in small classrooms and have to, like, protest to get, like, you know, free KN95 masks when they go to school. Like, you know, literally they're walking out, like, during a pandemic to get that kind of stuff. So, like, when that's happening, like, yeah, you can't, in good faith, which is never how these deals operate, but in good faith, you know, divert hundreds of millions or billions of public money towards a stadium. So I'm hopeful that they continue to hold the line here, you know, and that they demand that the A's, you know, bear all the investment costs here for something that will make them lots of money, because it is a nice area, the Howard Terminal. Like, if it's built up, it will be cool, you know. But you know, I just hope that, I hope they can just continue to. But anyway, yeah, that's that's obviously not a, you know, an on the field matchup. I think the Rays Jays thing is kind of what has me most interested right now, given that that actually has, you know, I'm more certain than any other series, you know, and there are some good nice series this week, you know, gonna have like real seeding implications. Like, I don't think the Astros are certainly not in one game. The Astros are not catching up to the Yankees. One random game they have to play together. I do think the Dodgers will, you know, will succeed the Padres. The Rays and Jays, though, might be very close in talent, and, you know, and so that's, you know, that's a series to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Jays and Rays. Jays are a game and a half up on the Rays, so that's interesting. Dodgers are only a game and a half up on the Padres right now. They're same number of wins. Padres have played three more games. They've lost three more games. The one I was just going to call out was the one you mentioned on the Yankees and Astros. They obviously just had an exciting series split, including a no-hitter. But the because of the way the schedule broke after the first week of the season was missed, they're making up games. The Yankees have some weird scheduling where today they're in Oakland, and then today being Wednesday, then tomorrow, Thursday, they're in Houston, and then Friday they are, where are they Friday? They are in Cleveland. So it's a bit of a weird road trip. But, you know, that's how they were squeezing in some of these games that were missed in the first series. That series, or that first week of the season, they were supposed to play in Texas and in Houston. So this is kind of how they're making up those games. So, I think that'll do it for us. Thank you, Bradford, for joining us, not only from the West Coast, but in pants. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into another episode of Five and Dive, brought to you by the Baseball Perspectives Podcast Network and our Patreon supporters. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/fiveanddive. You can get in touch with the show at fiveanddive@baseballperspectives.com. We are wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Baseball Perspectives Podcast Network, and we'll be in that feed. Thank you again. We'll figure out if enough happens in the next couple of days, we'll come back Friday. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.